Welcome to Fronteras, a program that explores issues at the border and beyond through the lens of arts, culture, and history. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Tuntun is an Alabama-born red-headed truck driver who was seduced by fast money transporting drugs across the El Paso-Juarez border. Juan Rojas was an undocumented man living in the U.S., deported to Mexico. He lived as a low-level drug dealer in Ciudad Juarez and eventually disappeared. Paloma is a middle-aged Mexican-born sex worker who makes ends meet with maquila work in Juarez and has survived several close calls with violence. These are just a handful of the many informants who spoke with anthropologist Howard Campbell in his decades-long fieldwork in Ciudad Juarez. Their stories and his analysis are published in the book Downtown Juarez, Underworlds of Violence and Abuse. The book examines the various factors that align to create an inescapable cycle of violence, abuse, and addiction among many residents of downtown Juarez, residents like Tuntun, Juan Rojas, and Paloma. Today, we're continuing a conversation with Campbell we started last week. Campbell says he's found people to be remarkably open in talking to him about their lives.
It all boils down to, I suppose, being a good anthropologist or a good journalist or a good friend and getting to know people over very long periods of time, which is what I did in Juarez. You know, 3 decades of working and getting to know people and their families and what have you, to the point where they felt trust in me and could confide in me and tell me about their lives. And so at that point, it was an open book, and people really told me exactly what they were doing and how they were living and the problems they had. And I tried to convey some sense of that in the book. And I have to say, I don't want this to sound like, oh, it's just a horror story. I mean, I've had so much fun in Juarez. It's a wonderful place. People are amazing, and their stories are just beyond belief. And so I don't want to reduce it to the problem of violence and drugs, but of course we have to address this problem because, you know, this problem has not stopped in Juarez. There's no let up to it, and there has been no solution from the Mexican government, from the American government, from local authorities. And so there's this reproduction of the same problems over and over, and that's why I focused on the negative, because this problem just hasn't gone away.
A lot of people hear that border areas are incredibly violent, but there almost appears to be some sort of a dichotomy, right? The areas on the Mexican side of the border are incredibly violent, whereas on the U.S. side of the border, really the dichotomy between the El Paso-Juarez murder rate last year is quite telling. And it's the same, I think, across most border regions across the U.S., or at least across the Texas-Mexico border. Do you have maybe a theory or an explanation of why that is, why violence does not bleed over, even though there are so many ties between the two communities?
Yes, it really is remarkable. Like last year, El Paso had maybe 50 homicides and Juarez had 1,200. Now, it's not because the drug business is only in Juarez and not in El Paso. I went to a federal trial in the courthouse in El Paso in which important members of the Sinaloa cartel described the drug dealing, drug trafficking they did in Juarez and in El Paso around 2010 to 2012, 2013. Many of these members of the Sinaloa cartel lived in El Paso, and they would travel to Juarez to engage in drug deals and to kill people. And so one might say that the drug business is equally on both sides of the border, right? But the violence stays on the Mexican side. And the reason for that primarily is because people that are involved in criminal activity in Mexico fear U.S. law enforcement. They believe that it's extremely efficient and effective, and they will get caught if they engage in violence and homicides in the United States. Whereas in Mexico, let's face it, only about 2% of criminal acts are ever punished. There's a real breakdown of law and order. And sadly, the current president has made no progress in this. I mean, we know this, but his hugs, not bullets policy has not helped. It's meant that the military and the police have kind of backed off from the cartels, and so the violence rates have actually increased under President López Obrador, who I supported, by the way, because I thought he would be better than what came before him. But at least on the question of security and violence, he's been worse. But the point is not that Americans are better people and we're nicer and less violent and Mexicans are more criminal and somehow they're responsible for this violence. as the book argues, this is a joint problem. It's one caused by very high-level structural, economic, and political factors. There are cultural elements to this, but we can't point one finger south and say Mexico's to blame. But that's precisely what's happening right now by Trump and to some extent by Biden in the American election. So we need to have this complicated understanding and look at all the different factors. But let's face it, American law is more effective than Mexican law when it comes to punishing criminals. And so that's why the violence of the drug trade occurs in Mexico. The profits are made in the United States, and a lot of those profits go back to Mexican drug cartel people. But the business of drugs, it's just a lot harder to stop it in the United States because it's a much bigger country and people have more freedom. There's more mobility. The fact is, if you want to engage in crime, it makes more sense to do it in Mexico because you can get away with it. That's all. It doesn't have to do with superior values or people on either side of the border.
The normalization of violence that happens in Juarez, in a good part of Mexico where there is also violence, people have just kind of sort of had to live, because they really don't have any other choice, live with the violence and the circumstances around them. Do you think that the United States would be able to handle the level of violence that occurs in Juarez and other parts of Mexico if it were to happen here, theoretically?
No, I think that the U.S. populace wouldn't stand for it. I mean, American democracy is very flawed, but it is more effective at addressing these kinds of social problems. We cannot stop this serious drug abuse that leads to 100,000 people dying every year in the United States. But when it comes to violence, we do have the ability through high technology, through well-paid police forces, police agencies, to crack down on violent groups of people. And so the United States, with all of its flaws, is a relatively safe country in general, except for in the biggest cities and certain parts of them. Although our history of engaging in violence in foreign wars, this is certainly a subject for another conversation, but it's quite terrible. And the United States is often the instigator of that violence. And so there is a great deal of hypocrisy in the U.S. when it comes to issues of violence. Yes, we say Mexico's so violent. But, well, we were involved in the war in Iraq and the war in Vietnam and the Second World War and the First World War and all kinds of other smaller wars and the Korean War. And yet we were the victim and we were just defending democracy and it wasn't our fault. But, you know, who bombed Tokyo? Who bombed Hiroshima? Who bombed Nagasaki? So we need to get away from the hypocritical views about these issues and look at the real problems.
Well, if you were to speak to many right-wing political candidates or right-wing pundits, you would think that that violence has already crossed, that we are in danger of cartels coming to rampage our cities and towns and to rape and plunder. They want to have cartels consider terrorist organizations. They want to potentially launch a military offensive against cartels, which would be impossible because how would you know where they are? What's your response to that particular type of rhetoric that seems to be so easily digested by people who feed into that kind of information?
Right. It's a very knee-jerk understanding of complex problems. And as we've seen in Trump's campaigns over and over, this knee-jerk rhetoric about Mexico bringing rapists and murderers and drugs and immigration being a source of American problems is effective, because the average person is not a scholar, is not maybe extremely rational and well-educated and what have you, and they easily fall prey to these stereotypes. And that's why we need to understand the complexities of these issues. Because we can argue over and over, like I've always said, you know, these cartels are not just Mexican, they are American and Mexican. The drug problem is created by American demand and American guns and what have you, in addition to the crime in Mexico. But for some reason, those kinds of complex explanations are not accepted by most people. What affects them are very, very gut-level stereotypes. And that's why I was reading in CNN, and there was this analyst who said, look, what Biden needs to do is use a colloquial rhetoric in attacking and criticizing Trump's ideas so that the average American can understand what he's saying. Because using complex concepts like, I don't know, an inflection point or something like that, which I remember Kamala Harris using in a speech. Most Americans don't know what that means, and it doesn't move them. So we have to get down, unfortunately, into this street fight with right-wingers and people like Trump. They're going to reduce the border, Mexico, and immigrants to these subhuman killers. We need to fight that head-on and say, look, this is crazy, it's wrong, but in very colloquial language. I think that's the only way to fight back against that kind of stereotyping.
Howard Campbell is a professor of anthropology at the University of Texas at El Paso. He's the author of Downtown Juarez, Underworlds of Violence and Abuse. When we come back, Howard Campbell knew he was treading on treacherous territory when he chose to write about the causes of violence in Juarez.
A lot of people said, well, you can't perpetuate this narrative of violence in Juarez. But unfortunately, yes, we have to continue to perpetuate this narrative because it continues.
Our conversation continues next on Fronteras. Welcome back to Fronteras. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. The Mexican border city of Juarez was known as the murder capital of the world in 2010 when murder rates were averaging 8 per day. The high rate of murders and disappearances are largely blamed on cartel violence. Anthropologist Howard Campbell has lived in El Paso for almost 3 decades and has spent almost as much time across the border in Juarez, both for recreation and fieldwork. He argues in his book Downtown Juarez that cartel violence is just one factor in the seemingly never-ending cycle of violence and abuse in Juarez. Factors like cartel violence, government and police corruption, and unfair economic policies work synergistically to trap some residents in inescapable social and economic poverty. Campbell spends the last several pages of the book writing about Paloma, a sex worker he describes as encapsulating the normalization of violence. She's a middle-aged mother of 2 adult children. She holds a job at a maquila, but makes ends meet with sex work. Paloma has been violently victimized by men and women. Campbell says Paloma's story, like those of other sex workers, epitomizes the worst forms of abuse and violence experienced in Juarez. He says part of it is because they're stereotyped as fallen or bad women.
They have very hard work conditions in which they often get diseases, sexually transmitted diseases. They're often beaten by men. And once their physical beauty is exhausted, they're just refuse and thrown to the side. And of course, many prostitutes have been murdered. So in that sense, a sex worker could be considered sort of the ultimate symbol of this kind of normalization of violence. And so in order to understand that, then we need to look at, well, how come prostitution is always so big on the Mexican side of the border and with brothel? It used to be that there was a brothel district in every major Mexican border city. Why? American demand, exactly like the American demand for drugs, American demand for sex, because the United States has a very puritanical culture and because sex work historically has largely been demeaned and prohibited by U.S. law. And so people, Americans, would flock to Mexican border cities to meet prostitutes and do what they wanted to do that they didn't consider anything really bad. And so Mexico provided this, but the people that are providing it, of course, the sex workers, as I say, are at the bottom of the social hierarchy and the ones that are the most subject to mistreatment. And in that sense, I wanted to devote a chapter to a person like that because it does kind of epitomize the various ways in which the border relationships between the United States and Mexico do create victims. And in that sense, sex workers then could be symbolic of this problem of violence on the Mexican side of the border.
Well, since this book was published in 2021, I'm curious if you have noticed any change in the situation in downtown Juarez. It's been just about 3 years now since the book came out. Has there been any change? And if not, why do you believe there has not been?
Well, one of the biggest problems is that downtown Juarez used to, a lot of it lived off of the tourist industry. And so thousands of Americans would go to downtown Juarez to buy things, to go to restaurants, to go to the brothel district, to meet friends, what have you. It was a very, very lively and dynamic environment. And Tijuana is like that today. Tijuana has a very vigorous tourist industry, both for Mexican nationals and for people from California and around the world. And people love to go to Tijuana to go to their wonderful restaurants and walk around and buy stuff that's much cheaper in Mexico than the U.S. And it's a sort of carnival atmosphere, which is also very, very profitable and employs thousands of people. Ciudad Juarez could have that if we could remove this extreme violence and return to how things used to be, and that Juarez used to be a relatively safe city and was very easy to cross the border. One of the problems with the tourist industry, it's not just the violence, but as anyone knows in El Paso and Juarez, these days coming and going from El Paso to Juarez or vice versa is not very easy, in part because of the U.S. crackdown. The U.S. makes it very hard to get into the country unless you have all your documents in order and you look the right way and behave the right way and all that. And now, because of population growth, let's say I drive to Juarez to go see some friends and hang out for 3 hours. It might take me 2 hours in the line on the free bridge to come back. And so it used to be that almost every El Pasoan would go to Juarez as a rite of passage when they were a teenager or earlier to visit their family or to hang out or to go to downtown Juarez. Much of that is gone now because of the violence and because of the hassle, just the physical hassle of getting in a line. Sometimes there's a line in El Paso to go to Juarez, and there's almost always a line to come back, whether you're coming back in a car or walking. And so these factors, the violence factor and how difficult it is to cross the border, has really destroyed the tourist industry in Juarez, except for in a few fancy restaurants and bars. And so I have seen very little improvement in downtown Juarez in that regard. Downtown Juarez is safer now. Much of the violence associated with the drug trade and the homicides in Juarez in general occur on the periphery of the city, in the eastern neighborhoods, the southern neighborhoods of Juarez, and also western neighborhoods, but not right in the downtown area. Even though there is violence, it's not nearly as severe as it used to be. But there's not been a great deal of improvement. There's still a lot of drug addiction down there. And then you have thousands of immigrants passing through all the time, which has helped local businesses, hotel owners, restaurant owners, people that have stores have made a lot of money off the immigrants. But the immigrants, many of whom have nothing and are begging on the streets or struggling to get something to eat, are sort of competing with the very, very poor people that occupy downtown El Paso. And so that makes it even harder for the poor of the inner city of Juarez. So even though I'd say, yes, downtown Juarez is much safer than it used to be, but the deeply rooted problems of poverty and inequality persist.
You write about the perverse appeal of visiting inner city Juarez. You've been mugged. You've been bitten. Do you think that maybe these stories might be sort of perpetuating the stereotype that people might have of Juarez? I know we've talked about some of the wonderful things that are going on there, but do you think that maybe it's just that spotlight on that one issue? People hear the whole story, but they only want to focus on one thing. Do you think that's what keeps even people from the border region from wanting to visit Juarez because of, you know, horror stories that a cousin or, you know, a friend told them?
Yes, that's absolutely the problem, and that's why it was very risky even writing this book, because a lot of people said, well, you can't perpetuate this narrative of violence in Juarez. But unfortunately, yes, we have to continue to perpetuate this narrative because it continues. Like I said, 1,200 homicides last year. So that reality has to be taken head on, and it needs to be dealt with. However, as I said, much of Juarez, the people of Juarez live normal lives, and Americans can go to Juarez and have a great time and not have any difficulties other than the hassle of getting back into their own country. So we need to fight stereotypes, but we also need to face realities. And it is a complicated situation. There aren't simple answers, and that's what worries me about the Trump-Biden election, which really I think we can expect severe demonization of Mexico, the border, and immigrants.
Is there anything that I haven't asked you about that you'd like to talk about regarding your book or anything else that we've brought up in our conversation?
I would just want to say that I've really loved living in El Paso because of Juarez. Honestly, if it wasn't for the border and Juarez, I don't know that I really like El Paso very, very much. But I like Juarez just as much. And without Mexico and without Juarez, I couldn't live here. So even though I grew up like on another border in Idaho, which I love very much, it's beautiful and everything, but it's not Mexico, and so it's not as attractive to me. And so for me, Mexico has always been a huge part of my life, and I think that anyone who's lived there or experienced the culture can understand why.
Dr. Howard Campbell is a professor of anthropology at the University of Texas at El Paso. He's the author of Drug War Zone, Frontline Dispatches from the Streets of El Paso and Juarez. And he also wrote Downtown Juarez, Underworlds of Violence and Abuse. And we're winding down the show today with music from one of Juarez's most famous sons, Juan Gabriel. Thanks for joining us today for Fronteras. Fronteras is produced by Norma Martinez and Marian Navarro. Our executive producer is Dan Katz. Our editor is Fernando Ortiz Jr. Charanga Cakewalk composed our theme music. Hear past episodes at tpr.org and on the Fronteras podcast. Special thanks to KTEP and El Paso for their studio assistance. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Muy bueno.